Welcome to another Rick and Bob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.
Now, Rick, the AFL Grand Final, the Western Bulldogs or Footscray against the Sydney Swans or the former South Melbourne, it was a game for the ages.
It was a ripper of a game, wasn't it? I really enjoyed every moment of it. I think, unlike many Grand Finals, it actually turned out to be everything that we expected it to be.
Yeah, you had everything. Some of the goals were just... You know, they'd qualify for goal of the year, at least four or five. Several marks would also qualify. The tackling, the pressure, the flow on footy, it had it all.
It did. It really was a wonderful showcase of Australian rules football. I don't know whether it was being directed into China, but that's the one that should have been in there.
Yeah, so I knew you'd get your Port Adelaide bit in there somehow, but... But the game itself, I mean, you've got Western Bulldogs, their first grand final since 1961 when they lost to Hawthorn, which was Hawthorn's first flag in the old VFL. And their second premiership, their first was in 1954. So they've now won two flags from three grand finals in this competition.
Oh, yes. And I think they're everyone's favourite, unless you really barracked for Sydney. I think for the weekend, I think I said last week that Sydney became the Collingwood of the league, that if you don't barrack for Collingwood, you barrack for every team playing against them. And I think everyone really wanted the Bullies to get up.
Yeah, when you look on the television and you see that the shot from the air looking down at the crowd in the MCG, you could see a predominant red, white and blue.
Oh, yeah. And surprise, surprise, I think we expected it. Obviously, you can work out how many spaces there were for Sydney supporters. And sure, they are the old South Melbourne. But the hometown advantage, I think, was truly, truly there.
You know, in the lead-up, the week leading to the grand final, everyone was saying that, oh, the Swans will be too good, or, you know, who do you want to win? And I said Footscray all the way because obviously the Bulldog ties with Central District, which is my club. But beside that, it was just a fairy tale story, and it was the one that I really wanted for a team like Western Bulldogs to get up. I remember back in 97-98 when the Adelaide Crows beat Footscray in both preliminary finals to knock them out. And in the first one, they won by 2 points after being 29 points down at half time. And in that particular grand final, Tony Liberatore, who was a Brownlow medalist, he kicked what he thought was a goal and was celebrating really unusually. He got up, did a scissor kick on a teammate and was hanging off the teammate. And then he was deflated when the goal umpire signalled a point. So I saw that irony when his son, Tom Liberatore, became a premiership player.
Yes. Well, obviously, as an unbiased supporter of Port Adelaide, I won't comment too much on the Crows' successes, but point made.
Yes, getting back to the grand final, I mean, there's some really good stories within the stories. I mean, there was Tom Boyd, the ruckman, he kicked three goals, and he's on this $1 million-plus sort of contract, and there was a lot of questions about his ability, is he worth the money, et cetera, et cetera. I think he... paid them back in full with his efforts in the grand final.
Well, he did. And it's always a bit mean to talk about players and how well they are paid and how well they play. And certainly his form had been questionable, or a lot of people had questioned his form, but he played pretty well in the previous game. And he certainly came to town in the grand final. I guess you could probably argue, on the other hand, considering the amount he gets paid, perhaps you could ask whether Tippett really is worth everything he's getting. But that's life, isn't it?
No, it is. And another good story of the three goal kickers, there were three of them that kicked three goals each. Tory Dixon, sort of, he was a good little story to follow up with his three goals. Tom Boyd took a lot of marks and lucked well and kicked his three. Liam Picken kicked three. Now, his old man played for Collingwood and never played in a premiership team, like five grand final losses.
Yep, it's the way it goes, isn't it? Well, you know, they talk about the Collie Wobbles, and I guess he chose to play for the wrong side. It doesn't break me up a lot that Collingwood have never played in those grand finals.
Yeah, that's ironic that you say that about the Collie Wobbles and his old man not being able to play in a premiership team yet. Liam Picken chose Western Bulldogs that hadn't won a flag since 1954.
But he could see the writing on the wall, I think.
And, you know, we were talking about, you know, Tom Liberatore and Tony from the Italian background. And then you look at the Jason Johansson, who won the medal for best on ground. I mean, unbelievable. He had that pace. He was the guy that sort of was a little bit of the difference in the team because he added that extra pace more so than any other person on the ground.
I couldn't agree more. And I've done a little bit of homework on him, and I think many people will be very surprised to, well, many people will probably want to know what sort of nationality he is, and I would think you'd probably have five guesses and never come up with the answer. He's actually a South African, and his parents migrated to Perth mainly to give the two children a better chance in education, and his background is rugby. And when you look at the way he runs and carries the ball, it all fits together, really. I mean, he was quite sensational, and his speed is astronomical.
And something that we'll go back to when we were talking about Tony Liberatore, sort of thinking he got that goal, and it was discounted, and they lost that game by 2 points in 97. Johansson kicked that goal in the grand final, which was a very important goal at that stage. And they did a review. It would have given them a 14-point lead or something. And they did a review, and they took it away because it was touched that just that fraction millimetre before it crossed the line.
Yep. And I guess this is the old story of modern technology, isn't it? I guess in the old days, that would have been given a goal. I still have my serious doubts about, you know, reviews, because you can still, I think, argue whether the camera angle really showed, was at the perfect position to work out that it was touched one minuscule, you know, before the line. And the same applies with the replays in cricket and many other sports. I think it's interesting that, according to what I understand, replays aren't permitted in American baseball. You probably know more about that than I do.
Oh, they've used it in the last couple of years for home runs and things like that, but generally speaking, they don't. Of interest, with that camera shot that they showed, it was on a slight angle showing the ball going over, yet in the background, you could see the goal umpire was in the perfect position to call that, which, why do we have goal umpires if they're going to overrule someone in perfect position?
I couldn't agree more, and that would be my argument for these blokes standing on a test cricket ground getting paid a lot of money to make a square.
and look, we've talked a lot about, you know, Footscray and Western Bulldogs, and obviously they're deserving winners. Josh Kennedy for the Swans could have arguably been the best on ground. He played a sensational game for the Swans.
He is perhaps the best all-round footballer going around, and I just cannot believe how many touches and to advantage that he gets day in, day out, week in, week out. And to be honest, taking nothing away from JJ, because he played a magnificent game for the winning side, but I really do think that if it had been the other way around and the Swans had got up and won, I think Kennedy would have got best on the ground. His work rate is just phenomenal.
Of course, he's got a very famous family line there with his grandfather, the coach of Hawthorn, and his father, a premiership player of Hawthorn. So he comes from good stock.
He certainly does. And they do it with racehorses, and I've got a feeling it works with footballers too.
Now, another player, a game breaker, was Lance Franklin. Buddy Franklin was expected to be a major player, but he went off with an ankle strain early in the game, about the 4 minute mark, and he was on the bench for a period of time, and he started on the bench in the second quarter. But overall, I thought his contribution was one of the better ones for the Swans. He never gave up. He was hurdled a little bit with the ankle, but he hobbled with the ankle, but he kept on performing. He kicked that vital goal in the last quarter, which had the hairs standing on the back of the neck. So I take my hat off to Buddy. He really performed even though he was injured.
I totally agree. People can have their own versions of Buddy Franklin, but he gave his all. And no one knows. Football is all about injuries or lack of them. And Sydney, probably you could argue that the Bullies, nothing went right injury-wise during the season, and yet during that game, everything went right, including Roughhead being allowed to play in it after his bleeding behind the eye from the previous week. And Buddy getting injured so early, but my heavens, he fought hard for them. He really did. It wasn't his fault they didn't win.
No. And then, of course, I suppose a hero for you might have been Caleb Daniel. I don't know how tall he was, but he wears that headgear, and he'd be probably one of the smallest men on the ground. And he played out here for South Allen in the SNFL, and he's a local boy from South Australia. So it's interesting that so many South Australians sort of stand up on the big stage.
Well, it's interesting you mention him because from my height level, he's very impressive. He actually takes me by about 2 centimetres. but he's a great kid. And he went to Aberfoyle High School. As you said, played 11 games for South Adelaide before he went into state. And wears the head guard on voluntary grounds just to avoid perhaps at the height he is of collecting too many head injuries. But it was interesting because the day of the little fella seemed to be over in AFL, and yet there were 3 of them running around there on the weekend. You know, there was Caleb, and then there's Ben McGlynn, who's only 172 centimetres, and Tom Papley, who's only 176. So maybe there's a spot still for some smaller blokes. And if you throw in the Eddie Betzes and so forth, we might all be making a comeback.
Well, I it's interesting. Looking at yourself, you played in a Sheffield Shield success with South Australia, and now Caleb's got an AFL Premiership medallion. So I suppose you guys are equal in the Sporting Small Man Hall of Fame.
Well, I don't know about that, but at least we're eye level to each other. That's an advantage, I guess.
No, but just to finish off with, it was a sensational grand final. Probably the best AFL grand final I've seen probably since 1989 when Hawthorn and Geelong played out that epic grand final.
Yes, I think it was a great grand final to watch and to participate in, and they'll never forget it. Just before we finish, I'll just mention that we had another couple of representatives playing out there, not for the winners, but George Hewitt is a PAC boy from Port Broughton, and Heath Grundy played for Norwood before he went over the border as well. So I guess that wasn't that many South Australians, but important ones.
Yes, every season there seems to be South Australians sort of infiltrating the other AFL teams, which is it's good old SA flying the flag.
Yep, is indeed.
Well, that's the end of another Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.